It's 9:18 at Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Good morning. I'm Jim Dewey, and we start on a Wednesday with Laura Siebert, Executive Director of Arts Quincy, and another busy week for the arts folks.
Oh, the fall is just jam-packed. There is an arts opportunity for everyone in Quincy in the fall.
And just about every day.
Just about every day. And I'm going to talk about a couple of things here, but you know, don't miss the Arts Quincy calendar at artsquincy.org, and even sign up for our emails. We do an email about every other week. We're not going to spam you and send you a ton of email, but it'll keep you up to date with everything that's going on. Kicking off with Friday night, we have another exhibit opening in the Quincy Art Center. These guys are just nonstop over at the Art Center. They put out some amazing shows, and this one is no exception. It's actually three shows in one. Misty Gamble's Abject Reverie display, Fred Jones's retrospective, and the Using Teapots from the collection of Howard Koo. There's sculpture, there's mixed media, there's these teapots that are part of the bigger Chinese culture piece that the Quincy Public Library is doing all
along. Oh, sure, yeah.
There is really something for everybody at this one. And why I love the exhibit openings, because you can go down for the next month and check these amazing things out, but why I love the openings is you're going to see a lot of people, a lot of art lovers. You can talk about the pieces there on the wall. A lot of times the artists will be there themselves to answer questions, and certainly the very knowledgeable staff at the Art Center will be there to answer questions. So, you know, if you've never checked out an opening, it is free to attend. Just walk on in. There's even usually some snacks. Last time they had some ginger cookies that were just awesome. Worth the trip by themselves.
You had me at cookies.
Yeah, I'm
sorry.
Right. I can tell. You can tell I need some breakfast. But but anyway, it's a great exhibit, and we're excited to have it. Leading right into perhaps one of the coolest things that's come through Quincy in just a really long time, Quincy Civic Music Association's first concert of the year, Jason Yang and Jake Moulton. This is happening Saturday at the Quincy Community Theater. I believe you guys had actually Quincy Civic Music Association on here this week talking about it, but Jason Yang is a violinist, and he is not your average violinist.
Right.
He is kind of alternative and rocky, and he has played with Madonna on stage, so he's just something really different.
Didn't he create or play the theme song for
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, so I'm not familiar with it.
But, oh, gosh. The theme song is a phenomenal piece, but I imagine he may even do this excerpt from that at this concert. He's playing with Jake Moulton. Jake Moulton is a beatboxer. So put it together in your mind, a violinist and a beatboxer. Maybe even look up a couple YouTube stories, because it's amazing. And it's a national-level act. I mean,
sure. They
tour the world, and I can't believe they're here in Quincy. I'm so excited to go. Tickets are $27, but we are giving away a pair on Arts Quincy's Facebook page today.
Uh-huh.
So all you have to do is go on and comment on our photo on Arts Quincy's Facebook page, and you might just win a pair of seats at this amazing show. Otherwise, get some tickets, because you won't want to miss it.
Yeah, Saturday night, 7:30 at Quincy Community Theater.
And tickets are on sale at Brown Drug, Quincy Steamboat Company, Second String Music, Quincy School Music Center, Java Jive in Hannibal, and both Curlin's Hallmark locations and both Hy-Vee locations in Quincy. So tickets all over the place. Don't miss this one, guys. It's amazing. Last but not least, one of my favorite musicals of all time, Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. Have you seen the movie with Rick Moranis and
Steve
Martin? I'm told it's an even older movie than that, a B-movie from maybe...
Yeah, originally it came out either very early 60s or late 50s.
Yeah, with Jack Nicholson. I had no idea. Culver Stockton's putting this on at that Alexander Campbell Auditorium, great venue. It's going on Friday through Sunday. There's shows every day. And this is the most fun little musical. The music is recognizable and great. It's really a Motown style B-movie spoof.
Yep.
It's funny.
And
campy.
How often do you get to see a plant eat somebody? I mean, come on.
I'm telling you, this is just a fantastic show. So be sure to check it out. You can check out the Culver Stockton website for more information, or call 573-288-6346. And for all of these events and much, much more, artsquincy.org has you covered for arts, music, theater, history, you name it, we've got it. So find something on the calendar this fall to enjoy with your family.
All right, Laura Siebert, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much.
Talk Radio 930 WTAD at 926. We have mostly sunny skies now. It is 58 degrees, and I'm Jim Dewey in for Mary Griffith this week on The Mary Griffith Show. And my guests are the city manager of Hannibal, Jeffrey Lagarce, and the mayor, James Hark. Welcome you both. James, this is your first visit here. Jeff's been through the grinder before, so.
Yes, good morning, Jim.
I try to make it as painless as possible, but there will be math.
And you didn't tell us that.
All right, a lot of things to talk about going on in Hannibal, and so I'm glad to have you here. James, you've been a busy man since you took office in May.
Yes, there's been a lot of things going on, a lot of positive things. You know, I feel it's important for us to look forward towards the future, and essentially, we need to set the stage today for anticipation of what's going to happen 10 years down the road.
Right, and a lot of the work was being done before you took office, but they've come to bear fruit, I guess, since that time. Let's start with the first one that you announced, which was a big streets project. Jeff, would you explain again what that's about?
Yeah, well, the mayor, I think you've been elected. I'm not even sure you were sworn in yet. You've been elected maybe 4 or 5 days and sat down with me and said, what if we could take the worst streets in Hannibal? And some assessments had been done. About 55% of the streets in Hannibal are below par. We put $500,000 into overlays each year, but that's still not enough.
Right.
We just continue to get behind. It's 2.5 times more than we were putting in before we took this model up, but it's still not enough. And he said, what if we could do this all in one fell swoop and talk to me about a revenue bond issue? And I hadn't even thought of something like that, and gave it some thought, and we discussed it some more, and I talked with our street superintendent, and he said, my God, that would be wonderful. He said, we can do $500,000 on the streets every year for, you know, 10, 12 years, or you could take $6 million and put it into the streets and do it all in 24 months. And bring everything up to par more or less immediately.
Right.
We're kind of thinking 3 years at the worst. We're saying two, or we're saying three, but we're really thinking it's going to be possible in two. Now and then you get one of those summers where, you know, it rains 25 or 30 days during the summer and you lose a portion of the season. But we're thinking really over 24 months we will do this, and that would kick off in April. We will be issuing revenue bonds. I think it's December 14th is the target date. So we've been doing a lot of that kind of work lately, a lot of document review and project description and all that with the bond people.
Explain how the bonds work. Either one of you can pick this up, but it's different from asking the voters to approve a bond issue.
Yeah. Okay, so there's really two types of bonds. There's actually many types, but there's two main types that municipalities use. One is a general obligation bond, which typically grabs a hold of the property tax base, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a general obligation bond is backed by the full faith and credit of the issuer. And it basically says that no matter what happens, whether it's a major disaster event or a natural occurrence event or some kind of change in leadership, you're going to pay those bonds back no matter what.
Right.
And the bond documents would even say you will even raise taxes in order to pay them back if that becomes necessary. We don't have any GO, general obligation outstanding bond. We have a bonding capacity for about 200 million, but we have zero. I'm sorry, 22 million. We have zero debt. What a leasehold revenue bond is it works much like a lease. It's not backed by the city's full faith and credit. Think of it like a fire truck lease, kind of. There is, in the bond documents, something called an annual appropriations clause, meaning the city will appropriate money each year to make that bond payment. Mm-hmm. We don't have to by law. It's not, you're not backing it with your full faith and credit. It doesn't grab onto the tax base, and there's no tax increase inherent to it. It's a leasehold revenue bond. It's a lot like a lease. The bond trustee basically owns the assets until the bond is paid off, and here the assets would more or less be the streets. We have used leasehold revenue bonds on two prior occasions. Cities use them all over Missouri. Typically, the reason we're going with leasehold revenue bond is we have a half-cent street tax, and it's kind of a quid pro quo. The money that comes in for the half-cent street tax gets put right back down into the streets.
Right.
It's not a general obligation bond where it grabs onto everybody's property tax base and says, okay, the levy's now going to go up 14 cents per hundred. Or it's nothing like that. So a leasehold revenue bond does not require voter approval because you're technically not encumbering the city with debt.
We've already approved the sales tax, so
right,
money's
exactly.
going to be there anyway.
Exactly. It's a little bit difficult to explain. A bond council can explain it much better than I can.
Well, I think to simplify it, it's like anybody, even in their home, if you know you've got money coming in, you're going to be able to say, well, yes, okay, I can afford to buy or lease a car with that money, with that income.
Exactly.
Over a period of time.
Exactly mm-hmm. correct. And you know, that was the one important caveat that I wanted to get out there when I announced this program with the streets, was that we could take the same money, the half-cent street tax, about $500,000, that we throw into potholes and cracks and trying to Band-Aid the current streets.
Right.
Instead of doing that, much like Band-Aiding our old car that, you know, just keeps falling apart, we could take that same money and place it towards the lease bonds and have the streets fixed now so that you're driving on nice streets currently and would allow us to get ahead of things,
right.
get in the front of it. Sure, we're going to be making payments on that car, but we're also driving it somewhat maintenance-free. You're going to spend the money either way.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, why not be utilizing nice streets, making the payment,
right.
rather than driving on streets that are, let's face it, what the citizens have identified as just terrible. And that was the number one thing that's come across during my whole mayor campaign and even as my previous experience as councilman, is the condition of the streets. We just had to look at a new way of addressing it. I'm glad that the city manager was able to effectively run with the ball. You know, I handed it off.
There has been some concern raised at the last couple of council meetings about this bond issue and about encumbering the city government down the line. But really, the money is there, so it's not a new bond. It's not asking for new money. It's asking for money that's already there, just spending it more efficiently.
Correct. It's just doing things smarter. And, you know, yes, it is a new approach somewhat. You know, like Jeff explained, we've used this on a couple other projects in the past. But we're not in going out and creating new debt, you know, that was going to create a hardship on the taxpayers. That was important to me in the very beginning, and that's kind of how I'll continue. And my feeling is if there ever is a thing coming before the council that will affect the masses, the majority of the citizens, and also have a fiscal attachment where it's going to cost them more every month, then they should decide that.
Right.
When it's just a simple change in operational funding and how we apply our money that we currently have, that's an administrative thing. That's what we're hired to do. That's why we're elected to lead the community.
Right. It is 9:34. We're going to take a break, check in with the folks up at Urza Farmers here in a minute or so. When we come back, we're going to talk about a similar funding mechanism for improvements at the riverfront. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. It's 9:38 on the Mary Griffith Show with Jim Dewey and my guests, Jeff Lagarce, city manager of Hannibal, and James Hark, the mayor of Hannibal, and we were talking about the streets program, but we've got another new project that's going on that was introduced, and that is the improvements on the riverfront, funded by a similar mechanism, right? Or is the same kind of revenue bonds?
Yes.
Because in Hannibal, we do have a sales tax for our parks and recreation department as well.
Yes, exactly.
So this project, I mean, it's really neat. It's been worked on for a number of years, and there have been several public meetings and displays, opportunities for people to see what those changes are and to make their comments heard. And the announcement came out a couple of months ago, and the project leaves out the harbor or eliminates the harbor, and that has caused some backlash. What is happening in that realm? I mean, are people trying to get that on the ballot now so we have to vote on the harbor, or can they?
Yes. Currently, there is an organization, a group of individuals who wish to keep the marina as it is now. Those people are trying to collect signatures and have it placed on a ballot before the people to see if indeed these citizens want to keep the marina as it is or not. Personally, it doesn't matter to myself one way or the other, and I'm just being perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. Whatever the citizens deem that they feel is appropriate is the direction we'll go. You know, this riverfront project was presented back in 1996, renovations of the riverfront, and at that time the scope of the project went from above the boat club all the way to Bear Creek, and while it was a very comprehensive project, it was not affordable. There
right.
just was no way to do that. You know, looking at the riverfront, I know for about the past 10 years, there's been an issue there with some of the bend wall that's falling out. Glasscock's Landing is actually settled. You know, there mm-hmm. are some big issues with the riverfront, and even our insurance carrier has identified the risk management end of this. So that was one of the projects I wanted to tackle, is to renovate this riverfront. And, you know, you have to do it now.
Right.
We can't just keep making plans and revising plans.
You can't wait till it falls apart.
Exactly. Sometimes you just got to grab the bull by the horns and do it. And that's the approach I took. And, you know, I was in some meetings and listened to some comments with people. The marina hadn't been used. I really didn't foresee it being a big issue as it has become. Therefore, you know, the plans were developed based on a fiscal management approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what makes the most sense for the dollar. And that's the approach we took. And obviously the plan that established the riverfront without the marina as it is now was, you know, a little over $1 million cheaper. Actually, it was about $800,000 cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the avenue we took because we're trying to be fiscally responsible. You know, with that caveat, though, I grew up in Hannibal. I have fished the river and all the little backwaters. Heck, I've even fished in Bear Creek, and that was probably not the smartest thing to do.
I was going to say you haven't eaten that, have you?
Well, I'm still here anyway. But, you know, my main concern was I wanted the riverfront to return to somewhat like it was prior to 1950, to where people could drive down, you could actually sit at the riverfront, mm-hmm. look at the riverfront. It wouldn't be blocked by industrial-type applications.
Right.
Return it more natural. The second thing I wanted to really instill in this plan was to be sure that the local residents had access. I have fished quite a bit at Mark Twain Lake and done a lot of boating there as well, and I've always been impressed with the facilities where you drop your boat in at Mark Twain Lake. You could drop in. There were bathrooms nearby, wide ramps, multiple launching at one time, and I've seen that problem with our current marina, the way the ramp is designed. It's tight to put two boats mm-hmm. in at once. It's tight. Also, you know, it's an aged facility. So that was one thing I wanted to be sure was included in the new plan. I thought it was a great plan. I still think it's a great plan. But there are some people that disagree, and that's fine. You know, at least by doing this, by pushing forward, we have gotten people involved. Where before people weren't involved, they really didn't voice opinion
yeah.
one way or the other. So, like I told a guy the other day, regardless, Hannibal wins. We are moving forward.
I guess that's true. The one comment I have, and being a news person, I probably shouldn't take sides, but the one comment I would have is that people had plenty of opportunities to comment.
Yes, that's,
and
that's
and to
true.
See what was going on, and to wait until after the announcement is made to make your comments, you know, as you say, you gotta get started at some point.
Yes, and it was a little disheartening, because I based most of my actions were based on the, opinions and polls that were taken prior to putting this out there and approving the final plan. And then I say after the fact, I have people of different opinion, but as I said, I still feel it's a good project,
mm-hmm.
and regardless of the outcome, whether it goes to vote in April and people decide that they want to maintain a marina, we'll find a way to do that as well, but we have to take some action. We have a bend wall that's falling into the river.
Right.
We have issues of liability and loss
right. so
there.
Something has to get started, at least in that regard.
Yes,
immediately.
We have to start moving.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said very, very plainly, you have to start somewhere, and you have to start now.
Yeah.
And
one of the street projects would have been a part of this, right? That basically almost like putting Front Street back.
Correct.
Which hasn't been around since the flood wall.
Since the flood wall. And again, that is restoring the riverfront
yeah.
to an area where people can utilize it.
Yeah,
again,
have a nice walking trail, which it kind
sure.
of has now, but not really.
Not really. And even motorists to drive down mm-hmm. there now, you come down Broadway, you go across the current riverfront where there's some cobblestone left over from when it was in 1958 when they put the marina in and
mm-hmm.
the grain terminals and stuff. See, all that area used to be cobblestone all the way up through there.
Right.
You had a wide open public access, almost, I kind of equate it to a cobblestone beach.
And
it very much was like that. But you drive across that area, you turn and go up Center Street, you have about a one block area there to drive. This new plan would really open it up more and expand that to the point of where you have parking, new restrooms, an area for people, even, accessible as far as an ADA standpoint, to where any individual can go right up to the riverfront and experience, the sunrise.
Yeah. And, again, it's funded with the same mechanism. The money that we're already spending is going to be managed a little more, a little differently, I guess. I don't want to say that it's not being managed properly now, but it'll be managed differently to make sure the project gets done and that we have this.
Well, a project of this magnitude, the park department, there's a half-cent tax to maintain parks. We have 23 parks, and we bought 42 flood sites.
Right.
Not all the flood sites are going to be, what you and I would think of as bona fide parks. We're going to, reforest some of them, and some are going to be excellent park sites,
mm-hmm.
ball field complexes, things like that. But it's going to be a rather large park system. Our park director is working on a lot of plans for conversion right now, converting these former flood sites into usable
right.
parks. And when you get into a project of this magnitude, of the riverfront now, which is a $5.4 million project, you can't do it in phases and have it take 35 years. You
mm-hmm.
need to come in and do it right all at once. There's a lot of busted up asphalt and concrete down there. The whole situation down there doesn't drain. Sometimes you'll see dust and things like that. That's not from flooding. That's from rainfalls, and there's no curbing. And so, dust from the railroads wash onto our surfaces,
no, sure.
and of course they don't drain. They bird bath and pool, and I was telling the mayor my first month with the city. The city councilman came in to see me. He says, "We got to do something about the riverfront." He said, "The front wall's collapsing," and I literally a month. So I talked to the city engineer, and he had put together some schematics to fix it. And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "It's basically cost prohibitive." So this has been going on for a long time. I've been here almost 10 years, and the mayor talked about that as well, and now that the swimming pool repairs are done, that was a big deal.
Right.
The park department is saying, well, what is the next big project? And instead of going, well, we'll just fix the wall this year, and maybe we'll dress this up next year, it makes good sense to come down and just do the whole thing and do it right. So we paid a little more money than you normally would for the feasibility study and schematic designs because we had the designer put together two options for us.
Right.
We really wanted to see those options. And frankly, we didn't know which option we liked best until we actually got the work back and had a chance to review both these options. And in looking at the options, the plan A, which we modified to a plan C with a different boat ramp schematic, But the plan A or plan C really is virtually twice the space. It cost about $850,000 less. We felt it lent itself to festivals and weddings. And right now, the only real green space on the riverfront is a small section
Nipper
of glass
Park.
Parking lot. You really can't even throw a frisbee.
Mm-hmm.
It's very small. Well, Nipper Park, I stand corrected on that. There's Nipper Park as well. We just felt if we had a much larger riverfront. And again, we were hoping this cost would come in between $4.5 and $5 million. That's really the modeling we put together. It came in about $5.4 million, which is on the high end of really our affordability. Before we do this, we need to do it right. But when you have a project this big, you just can't we'll just take this much annually and fix this aspect. If you're going to do it all at once, you look at something like a leasehold revenue bond to come in and make this repair. So that's the tool we're using.
And that's another thing, too. If you don't get started soon, that price is only going to go up.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we recognize it was a little more expensive, my answer to that is, you know, our riverfront is probably the most historically significant reason why our community exists. If it were not for the riverfront and access to the river, there would have never been a Hannibal or a Mark Twain.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to really set this riverfront as a monument to last decades. Something that will serve the community as a sense of pride and not just, well, that's the old riverfront.
Right.
It's very important.
All right. Let's talk about something new that you brought. Actually, you've been talking about it at council for a while, and that's the city cleanup, something we haven't been able to do for a couple of years. And as you pointed out, normally it's done in the springtime, but we are going to have a citywide cleanup next month.
Yes, October 29th, I believe, is the date set for the citywide cleanup. You know, Hannibal is not immune from, you know, economics.
Sure.
Like any other community. And the past couple of years, you know, while it's been very important to the council and to the city manager to have our citywide cleanups, it just wasn't feasible. We weren't able to do it fiscally. But, you know, I'm fortunate. I come in at a time where we had a little better year. And actually, a little better couple of years. We've been gaining some ground
better
as far
trend,
as
better
trends.
Yeah.
So we were able to get into budget this year a citywide cleanup. It's a very expensive undertaking to do this because, you know, we have to pay to have it hauled off by the pound. So, you know, it is expensive. But we were able to afford it this year. And typically we have the citywide cleanups in the spring. But since it has been a couple of years and again, this is something I heard frequently about, when's the city going to have this? I really need help. That's a service to our community. That's what government does. We provide service.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make toasters or radios. We can't sell that product, but we can sell our service. So we decided to go ahead and push this and get this done here in the fall so that people can take advantage of it right away. And, you know, then we will look at when to schedule the next one and try to time it to where hopefully our trends stay the same. We can keep gaining ground or at least not lose ground to where we can have our citywide cleanups again on a rotational basis.
Yeah, and we'll have details on cleanup and get that out. I'm sure it'll be in the city's website, et cetera.
Yeah,
yes.
It's going to be a different location this year. It's going to be on Main Street, but not in the historic district.
Good. That's a good plan.
Yeah, it's going to be on South Main Street, which is south of
right
the
now. It's wide open. Where we ended up taking debris after the big storm.
Exactly, the flood buyout flats. Yeah. A large area down there.
Okay.
And
much more accessible to the public as far as in the past, we've had it out on Orchard Avenue.
Right.
And, you know, the roadways, you're a little bit confined there. Plus, there's a lot of truck traffic from the industrial park right in there. So it made it a little difficult to navigate. The idea was place it down here on South Main where there's a large open area, many different angles to get in and out, and also a way that we can get the product loaded and taken out and not interfere with people coming in. So we're trying to make it a safe environment, too, and also you know, what I've heard from the past citywide cleanups, and I was a part of, having to wait in line to drop your stuff.
Yeah.
Some people don't like to wait, kind of like waiting in line at a drive through to get your breakfast
Quincy,
in the morning.
Quincy had its big cleanup last weekend, and people were starting to get in line Friday night. So,
so hopefully we're going to have a large area there to accommodate that. People get in, dump their stuff and get out and go on about their day. And
there'll be a virtual army down there and tons of dumpers right. assist as well. Yeah. Yep.
So we're hoping for success. I'm sure there'll be flaws. Oh, there's going to be a little hiccups.
Are, and it's not going to be perfect for everybody, and you'll hear from the people that were disappointed. But
we'll take those we'll take those and apply it to the next process to make it even better. We'll just keep building on it. There's nothing comes out perfect first time, and you'll just keep working on it, modifying it till it suits everyone.
We've got just about a minute or so left. One of the reasons that the city is having this revenue blessing, as it is tourism. It has just risen incredibly.
Yes. There's been a dramatic increase in our tourism. Obviously, we've done quite a bit more advertising and things, and we're reaching other markets. Also, I look at what affects my touring habits, and that is the price of fuel.
Yeah.
And obviously, if I can pay less for fuel, I'm able to go further places. So I think that has helped somewhat, too.
Yeah. And one of the things, and I'll have to get Gail on the show one of these days, but one of the things that our tourism director has mentioned to me, too, is these river boats that are coming in, which are part of the reason for the design of the riverfront. When they come in, the people don't get to spend a whole lot of time in Hannibal, and so they see things that they want to come back and see again.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of repeat visits.
Yeah.
But business is good enough for the Tourism Bureau that they're looking at building a new facility, too. So.
Yeah, a new facility that will be closer to the entrance to the city so that you can capture the audience there and let them know what we have to offer. Hannibal has a lot to offer that people just don't realize.
And more all the time. Thank you both, Jeff Lagares, James Hark, for joining me this morning. I appreciate it, always.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll see you next week, I guess. You got a meeting coming up Tuesday night.
Yes, so. Tuesday night, so I'll see you then.
All righty.